Today is Friday, June the 10th, 2022, and it's a great day to have a day here on the Spurs Up Show, the best Gamecocks podcast on the internet. And on today's show, we continue along with our top five series, guys. Today, I'm talking top five best quarterbacks in Carolina football history. Guys, first things first, I'll go through your listener responses, and I'll break down my top five list, five through one, and give my explanations behind each of my selections. Also, guys, we got news and notes to get into, including some baseball notes as a starter from the last couple of years hits the portal, some more transfers possibly in the mix, a lot of news on the diamond. Also, guys, on that note, we got a fantastic conversation and a great exclusive interview with former Gamecocks All-American catcher and current North Greenville head coach Landon Powell. Guys, it's a conversation you for sure do not want to miss. So sit back, relax, enjoy, guys. I got a packed show for you here on this Friday. And of course, as always, it's brought to you by our friends over at SeatGeek. Guys, go download the SeatGeek app, go to SeatGeek.com. And when you do, use that promo code SPURSUP to save $20 off your first purchase of any purchase of $50 or more. Guys, whatever you need tickets to, whether it be sporting events, concerts, comedy club events, you name it, they got it. Hey, if you need tickets, if you're going to a Super Regional this weekend, if you're going ahead and buying your Gamecocks football tickets, whatever it is, guys, they've got tickets to everything you can think of. And the best part about SeatGeek, they've got what's called a deal score. And when you go into their app or you go to their website, you're going to see the tickets, you're going to see the price, and you're going to see a deal score. So you're going to know where you're sitting, how much you're paying, are you getting ripped off, are you getting a steal? So you're going to have that confidence when you click the buy button that you're getting the most bang for your buck. So again, that's our friends over at SeatGeek. Go download the SeatGeek app, go to SeatGeek.com. And when you do, use that promo code SPURS up. That's SPURSUP to save $20 off your first purchase of any purchase of $50 or more. Let's get it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Gentlemen, boys and girls, happy Friday, TGIF. Hope you're all doing well. I'm Chris Phillips, your host of the Spurs Up Show, as always, and we have got a packed show for you here on this Friday. Hope you're having a fantastic start to your weekend, and I hope this show does find you well, no matter where you are, what you are doing. Getting a lot to discuss and a lot to dive into here on this Friday. Hope you're staying cool, by the way, no matter where you are. I tell you what, my AC is working overtime. When you're in the city of dreams and you got these mid-90s temperatures and it's like the air conditioning just got to run and run and run, and that power bill, it goes up and up and up and up and up. And I know we can all relate to that struggle, but either way, you just got to embrace it. Again, folks, hope you're staying cool. Hope you're maybe enjoying some baseball, enjoying your time off, whatever it might be. You're on vacation, what have you. Again, thank you all so much for the continued love and support. I do want to say that I know it's been a little bit of a different week, a little bit of a wacky week with no Daily Crow and things are sort of random and all over the place with content and it being the quote unquote off season. And, you know, again, baseball in our rear view, football now just 78 days away as we continue to count down the days until toe meets leather. But I appreciate you guys continuing to be interactive, continuing to engage with the content, continuing to support on the merchandise side of things, and just continue to rock with us each and every single way you do. Again, guys, I cannot say enough things and how grateful I am for you guys' continued love and support. With that being said, I'm not 110% sure right now what the schedule is going to look like next week, because you look at next week, you know, again, it's another week where there's really not a ton going on. I mean, it is a big recruiting weekend in Columbia. It's a big visitor weekend for Shane Beamer. You might see a welcome home or two drop over the weekend or maybe early next week. But, you know, it's outside of that, there's really not a ton going on. So all that being said, the podcast is going to continue on, of course, guys, as normal. Will the Daily Crow return? That is TBD. Because on one hand, again, there's not a ton going on. On the other hand, I miss the Daily Crow. I miss talking to you guys. I noticed that at the Wednesday Tin Roof show, I was sitting there and I was like, man, I've got a lot to say, because I felt like I had this this pent up energy, you know what I mean, from not going live on the Daily Crow normally each and every single day. You know, I have 2 hours to talk and to vent and to chat with you all and to banter and all that good stuff. And I'm like, I'm missing that time now. So just stay tuned. I'm not 110% sure if the Daily Crow, we might take one more week. We might take one more week off of the Daily Crow, but I can tell you this, I don't think we'll take more than another week. I just think, you know, the Daily Crow is something I love to do. It has been great this week, having more time to do some different things and execute on some things and work on some things. So like I said, we might take one more week, but the Daily Crow will return, very, 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 very soon. And I'm excited for that. So I just wanted to keep you guys in the loop and let you all know what I was thinking on that side of things, but just stay tuned. I mean, as you all know, I can change my mind, and I'm known to do so from time to time. So again, I just thank you all for your love and support, man, and just rocking with us either way. Again, we have got a lot to discuss today, guys, from the gridiron to the diamond. We got a great conversation as well that we had Wednesday at Tin Roof. I do want to say thank you to those Tin Roof guys for setting up the Landon Powell conversation. This was something that happened very organically. Also Connor, that played at North Greenville, that joined me on stage. He was the one that worked with Talon over at Tin Roof to set that up. So again, I just want to say thank you to those guys, because, you know, Landon, Coach Powell is somebody that I've wanted to have on the show for quite some time, you know, now. And I've had Matt Williams, I've had Trey Dyson, I've had some of those other North Greenville guys, but to get Coach Landon Powell on there was absolutely incredible, and get to chat one of the all-time legends, one of the all-time Gamecock greats was incredible. And again, I know you guys are going to enjoy the conversation. Before we get to that, though, again, guys, we are continuing with the top five series. And what's so exciting, you know, we spent time talking about jerseys and helmets and all those fun off-season conversations, right? Now we're getting into the top five lists that are players, on-field players, our favorite Gamecocks, the best Gamecocks in school history. And this, I feel like, is where the debate is really, really, really going to heat up, because there are going to be guys on these lists. There are going to be lists you guys completely disagree with. And that's okay, because the beauty is in the banter. That's what makes this time of year so much fun. So again, guys, today we are talking the top five best quarterbacks in Carolina football history. Now, I want to go through your listener responses first, and then I have something to say before we go five through one. So your responses, I asked you all on social media, top five quarterbacks. Buttermilk on Twitter said Tannehill, Garcia, Phil Petty, Anthony Wright, and Blake Mitchell. My guy Hustlin' Crow replied, all he said was, please do not include Todd Ellis. That's one vote very strongly against Todd Ellis. Joey Mathis on Facebook said, number one, Connor Shaw, number two, Phil Petty, number three, Steve Tannehill, number four, Stephen Garcia, number five, a tie between Dylan Thompson and Blake Mitchell. He says honorable mentions would be Todd Ellis, Tommy Suggs, Jake Bentley, Mike Hold, Anthony Wright, and Savelle Newton. Chad Goblin says Mike Hold is in the top five. Luke Taylor says Shaw, Tannehill, Garcia, Ellis, and then Thompson. Ezekiel Ellis says Shaw, Petty, Ellis, Thompson, Garcia. Tim Branch says number one, Connor Shaw, number two, Connor Shaw, number three, Connor Shaw, number four, Connor Shaw, number five, Connor Shaw. Tyler West says Connor Shaw best hands down, then Tannehill and Garcia. After that, it's a toss up. Shane Lyon says Shaw, Garcia, Petty, Tannehill, Wright, Ben Reeves, Shaw, Garcia, Tannehill, Thompson, Mitchell. A lot of names we're very familiar with. Tannehill, Shaw, Garcia, Petty, Ellis is what Nick Babb says. Let's see. Lee Lazarus, how is Garcia even second? Love the kid, but he's not a blue a game. So there's a hot take on Steven Garcia. But hey, again, the beauty's in the banter. Matthew Reiser says Shaw, Garcia, Tannehill, Wright, Thompson. I actually saw a response here. I don't know why I don't see it right now. I did see a response from someone who had Steve Tannehill number one. Yeah, here we go. Nick Babb had Steve Tannehill number one overall. So again, some very interesting responses, some responses I think were expected. You know, most people are going to have Connor Shaw in their number one slot. I want to say this, though, because again, I dropped this list last summer, right? And I really made waves. I think this was like the first top five list that I dropped on social media last year over the summer. And I made waves because I had Jake Bentley in my top five. I had him at number five. And not to spoil my list, but I've had a change of heart since then. And I'll start with the guys that did not make it, who just missed out, that I would say are my honorable mentions. Just going down the list, Jake Bentley, Anthony Wright, Dylan Thompson, Mike Hold, Blake Mitchell. Who else? Who else is somebody that could be argued? Todd Ellis. Todd Ellis did not make my top five. And so, guys, when I go through five through one, right, you know, last year I was really heavy on statistics, and that's why I listed Jake Bentley last year at fifth, because I looked at it this way. Had Jake Bentley played his final season in Columbia, had he not gotten hurt, had he just played and had a normal Jake Bentley year, guys, he would own every single record at the University of South Carolina that a quarterback can own. Basically every single one. His name would be on the turnstiles at Williams-Brice Stadium, right? So I looked at that and said, you know what? Statistics, those matter. Those stand out. Jake Bentley in my top five. But I sat down and I really thought about it and I said, you know what? Winning matters. Winning matters. Winning games, the context behind the seasons in which they played, how South kind of fared, what they achieved in their career, those things matter. So I factored those things in really, really heavily, right, when looking at the top five quarterbacks in school history, because there's some guys that are listed at one and two. All throughout this list, there are guys that have better statistics. There are guys that were more talented overall, but it's a culmination of stats and winning and impact and all of those things mixed together and put into one. So that's my criteria. That's how I broke this down. So again, without further ado, guys, let's go ahead and dive into my top five best quarterbacks in Carolina football history. And we'll start with number five, my fifth best quarterback in Carolina football history. And again, like I told you guys, I had Jake Bentley in this spot last year simply due to statistics. And I will say this, by the way, about Jake. I look at Jake Bentley sort of like I look at Blake Mitchell. Two guys that, and what's so interesting about those two, I could do an entire podcast on comparing Blake Mitchell to Jake Bentley. And here's what I mean by that. I was very hard on Jake Bentley. Guys, I was not a Jake Bentley guy. You might recall, if you were following my content way back in the day, I was not a Jake Bentley fan. I thought he was a dude that was erratic. He was the modern day Todd Ellis. He threw too many interceptions. He would blow a game left and right. But when you looked at record and you looked at statistics, he wasn't that far off from what a Blake Mitchell did, who I feel like many, many fans, including yours truly, hold in a very high regard and hold almost like they endear him in a way, because he was Steve Spurrier's first quarterback. He was the first quarterback to beat Tennessee and Knoxville. You know, he beat Florida. He beat Georgia. I mean, Blake Mitchell had a solid career in Columbia. But what was the difference? So why do people look at Jake Bentley so much different? I think it's because of the expectations. I think it's because of just the turmoil surrounding Gamecock football and fans being dissatisfied with the direction of the program. I think there's many, many factors, right? Anyways, this is where, like I told you guys, I factor in winning and winning games and context, because you look at this dude's statistics. He played from 1998 to 2001, completed 454 out of 861 passes, 52.7% completion percentage. He threw for 5,656 yards, 28 touchdowns to 29 interceptions. So he threw more picks than he threw TDs. But when you factor in context, when you factor in that he was the quarterback that led the greatest turnaround in school history, taking a program, taking a football team, that went a combined 1-21 including a 21 straight game losing streak in 1998 to 1999, taking that program to back-to-back Outback Bowl victories and leading the charge. And again, the numbers aren't gaudy, right? His best passing season was 2000, threw for 2,285 yards, threw more INTs than touchdowns, 8 TDs to 10 interceptions. His senior year in 01, he threw 12 touchdowns with 7 picks. The offense, though, when you factor in running that Lou Holtz offense, Skip Holtz offense, that offense was sort of evolving into more of the spread, if you will, as Lou Holtz got later in his career and, you know, things. It was, but the fact he was the general of that team, led that team to the greatest turnaround in school history, one of the greatest turnarounds in college football history, and back-to-back Outback Bowls. And that really served, guys. There's no Lou Holtz without Steve Spurrier. There's no 2010 to 2013 without 2000 to 2001. And Phil Petty was the man at the controls of that. Again, my fifth best quarterback in college football history, none other than Phil Petty. Again, guys, I feel like Phil Petty, and I don't want to be too bold in saying this, I feel like Phil Petty was like Connor Shaw before Connor Shaw was Connor Shaw, right? Also wore number 14, which is kind of crazy. There's been a lot of great quarterbacks that wore number 14. But Phil Petty was not the flashiest. He was not the most talented. He didn't have the best arm. He wasn't the fastest, but the dude was a leader. He was a warrior. He was a battler, and he was going to will his team to victory. Of course, Phil, fan of the show, friend of the show, I should say. He's been on these airwaves, and you can just hear it in his voice when he talks about Carolina football. Again, when you keep in the context, yes, a guy like Jake Bentley, who I had in the five spot last year, his statistics are worlds better than Phil Petty's. But when you keep into context what Phil Petty means for Carolina football, what he did for the University of South Carolina, and just how significant the teams that he was a quarterback of, their achievements, right? Again, like I said, winning back-to-back Outback Bowls over Ohio State, beating an Ohio State team in the 02 Outback Bowl that won the national championship the next year. That all matters, and it matters greatly. And again, for that reason, guys, Phil Petty, my fifth best quarterback in Carolina football history. Let's move to my fourth best quarterback in South Carolina football history. And this man played from 1992 to 1995. You probably know where I'm going with this. Completed 727 of 1,209 passes, 60.1% completion percentage. He threw for 8,555 yards, 61 touchdowns, and 37 interceptions. Guys, one of the most well-known Gamecocks, I would say one of the most beloved Gamecocks in school history. And also, by the way, again, let's keep this in context, led South Carolina to their first ever bowl win in school history. Of course, I'm talking the greatest mullet also probably in school history, Steve Tannehill. And what a legend he was, man. And again, when you talk impact on field and off the field, his demeanor, his swagger, his theatrics, the passion in which he played with, the excitement in which he played with. You know, we've all seen it, signing the Tiger Paw, the home run swing, the antics that he played with, you know, the celebrations, taking off the helmet, all that stuff, man. I mean, Steve Tannehill was a larger-than-life human being, right? He was Stephen Garcia before Stephen Garcia was Stephen Garcia, right? With the hair and the moxie and just the swag and everything, the way he carried himself. And again, you look at the numbers, he takes over in 1992, you know, leads South kind of that second half of that year to a great finish. Again, wins the Carquest Bowl, the 1995 Carquest Bowl. And then you just look sheerly at the numbers, guys. I mean, his last 2 years, 19 TDs, 8 interceptions in 94. And then his last season, guys, in 95, threw 29 touchdowns to 9 interceptions, one of the better seasons in school history, threw for over 3,000 yards in that season. And like I said, I just think it's so significant because, again, you factor in his talent. And I talked about the 90s, guys, and I said that, listen, the 90s, that decade of Carolina football was dog shit. And I stand behind that, but if there's a bright spot, it is the Steve Tannehill era. 92, 94, you beat Clemson, right? So he went 2-2 against the Tigers, made a huge impact in that rivalry. And then again, like I mentioned, you win the first bowl game in school history, right? I mean, one of the most decorated players to wear the garnet and black, guys. I think it speaks for itself. Of course, we all love Tannehill's group therapy. Also, he owns one of the best bars in Columbia as well. So, I mean, the guy has made an impact and is certainly one that when you talk top quarterbacks, you've got to have Steve Tannehill in your list. So, again, guys, my fourth best quarterback in Carolina football history, Steve Tannehill. Let's move to number three, my third best quarterback in Carolina football history. And guys, winning matters. Titles matter. Statistics are great. But winning for me is what really stands out. And when you look at the University of South Carolina, we don't have a lot of tradition, do we? We don't have a lot to hang our hat on when it comes to titles, to championships, whether it be conference, whether it be national. There aren't many things. You know, the history and the tradition of Carolina football is not all that rich. You have one conference title, and that was in 1969 when the Gamecocks won the ACC. So it's only right that you put the man that led that charge, that led that group to that championship on this list. Guys, he played from 1968 to 1970, completed 355 of 672 passes for a 52.8% completion percentage. He threw 34 touchdowns and 41 interceptions. But again, guys, you have to keep in mind the era in which he played. But also, what stands out beyond the stats is leading Carolina to that 1969 ACC title. That, for me, trumps all the statistics can tell you. And again, guys, when you look at the history of Carolina football and what this program's achieved, just one conference title, and this is the man that led the charge. My third best quarterback in Carolina football history, someone we all love and know and are familiar with, Tommy Suggs. Again, statistics are great. Statistics tell a lot of the story, but they don't tell the whole story. You have to look at people. When I look at my top five guys, it's like, who can I not include when I tell the history of South Carolina football? And Tommy Suggs is someone you have to include because, again, this program has only won one single conference championship. So for me, guys, you have to keep in mind the era in which he played. You have to keep in mind what he accomplished, what his team accomplished, and the fact that he led that. Because, again, you look at his statistics on the field. That year, they won the ACC title. He threw 7 touchdowns to 11 interceptions. I mean, his best year was his first year when he threw for 1,544 yards, 13 touchdowns, and 12 picks. His last year, he threw for over 2,000 yards, but 14 touchdowns and 18 interceptions. Again, it was a different era of football, but leading the Gamecocks to that 69 ACC championship, that is what stands out for me, and that is why I have Tommy Suggs ranked as my third best quarterback in Carolina football history. Guys, let's move to number two, my second best quarterback in Carolina football history. This is where things get really, really, really fun when we're talking these top two, right? And again, it's about the way you impact a program. You can talk numbers and stats and even wins, but the mark you leave. And it's like, which guy is sitting here today in 2022? Are we still talking about that made a long-lasting impression and changed, literally changed the game and changed the direction of the South Carolina football program, right? And there are many guys who have accomplished many great things at the University of South Carolina. And this is a guy that has been much maligned. You believe it or not, there are some Gamecock fans that would argue against this gentleman, that for whatever reason have a vendetta against the man I'm about to discuss. He played from 2008 to 2011, completed 589 of 1,021 passes, a 57.7 completion percentage. He threw for 7,597 yards, 47 total touchdowns, and 41 interceptions. But most importantly, he did something and has done something that no other quarterback in the history of the University of South Carolina can say. He led the Gamecocks in 2010 to an SEC championship game appearance in Atlanta, Georgia. Of course, I'm talking Stephen Garcia, the legend that is. And I know, listen, I get it. The guy messed up during his time at Carolina. The jokes about, you know, he was just as suspended as much as he was on the field. He was always in Steve Spurrier's doghouse. He was out partying. He was out going crazy. Listen, I get it. We've had Steven on the show. Steven, someone I'm blessed to call a friend. And it's even crazy for me to say that because this is a guy I grew up watching on TV. And so the fact that I've had the opportunity to sit down with him and hear his story and conversate with him and have casual conversation, I mean, it's truly, guys, a blessing beyond words. But we've had him on this show, right? We've had him on the airwaves, and he's talked about the mistakes he made at USC and what he learned, and he was a young, dumb kid, and everything that happened. But honestly, it's all part of the legend that is Steven Garcia. It really is. Like, when you really think about it, right? All those stories, all those suspensions, all that turmoil, everything that went wrong. I don't know if Steven Garcia is Steven Garcia without all of that, right? Like, we say everything happens for a reason in life. Everything happens for a reason, right? And so, and what's so funny about Steven, and I've told him this, you know, you go out to tailgates now and the fish gets bigger every single year, right? The stories get crazier, and what he did and sideline antics and the hotel room before the Chick-fil-A Bowl and the night before, the night after the Bama game, and all the craziness, the madness, like, stories are still told about this guy to this day. But he changed South Carolina football, guys. When you're talking on the field, I mean, you think about the great wins with Steven Garcia. I mean, it first started back in 2008 when a young, high-flying freshman, 2007, I should say, I believe, right? He came in 07, I believe, or signed in that 07 class, excuse me. 2008 came in, this high-flying freshman with the long hair and believed in Greek mythology and the Trojans and all that, right? All that we heard. I remember following Steven Garcia on the recruiting trail and him saying, I don't want to just win one SEC championship at Carolina. I want to win multiple. My goal is to win two. My goal is to win three. It was that attitude that changed Carolina football. There was a reason his teammates rallied around him, right? You had the Chris Smellies then. You had the Blake Mitchells. You had the Tommy Beachers. You had the Reed McCullums. And all due respect, even the Connor Shaws, all due respect to all of them, right? All due respect. When Steven Garcia came in, it was different. He lit a fire under his team. He lit a fire under that group. Guys wanted to play for him. Guys wanted to go to battle with him. Guys wanted to go to war for him. And it speaks to the type of warrior and the type of football player that he was on the field, off the field, the type of teammate that he was with his guys. Again, this guy wasn't perfect. We all know that. But a dude that you would fight your absolute tail off for. And again, you talk on field, the great wins. 09 against Ole Miss, guys, that one sort of served as you could see it like, okay, things are changing. Things are changing under Steve Spurrier. 2010, of course, beating Alabama. I mean, my goodness, guys, right? That was the one where South kind of really kicked the door down and saying, we have arrived under Steve Spurrier. We are here as a legitimate contender. South kind of football is different forever now because of what we have done on this field against Alabama. Leading the Gamecocks to an SEC championship, man. Again, that's something nobody else can say. Even the great Connor Shaw, not to spoil my number one pick, but I think you guys know who I'm going to be going with. Not even Connor Shaw can say that. Nobody else in the history of South Carolina can say they have taken the Gamecocks to Atlanta. And I don't care what the state of the SEC East was. I don't care what any of those external factors. The fact of the matter is Steven Garcia led the Gamecocks into the swamp and beat their ass to get to Atlanta. Trucked, Will, whatever his name was. I don't even know what that guy's name was, but trucked the defensive back, right? We all recall that, jawing with him after or whatever. I mean, leading that victory, went 2-0 against Clemson, by the way, as the Gamecocks starting quarterback. This dude accomplished so much on the field, but it's the impact, guys. It's the impact, I think, that he made for the entire state of the program of South Carolina. He was the dude that needed to come in and lead the charge and kick the door down for the Gamecocks to accomplish what they did in 11, 12, and 13. So, guys, for me, it's a no-brainer. I think Steven Garcia, what he accomplished, he is my second-best quarterback in Carolina football history, which leads me to number one. The best quarterback ever to wear the garnet and black. The best quarterback ever in the history of the University of South Carolina. Folks, this man played from 2010 to 2013, during his career, he completed 480 of 733 passes for a 65.5% completion percentage, the best ever career mark for a quarterback at the University of South Carolina. He threw for 6,074 yards, 56 touchdowns to just 16 interceptions. And oh, by the way, guys, he went 17-0 at home, and he led the Gamecocks to three straight 11-win seasons and three straight bowl victories. The statistics back it up. The wins back it up. The impact on the program back it up. the achievements, the accomplishments, everything. Simply put, folks, the greatest winner in the history of the University of South Carolina's football program. It is a no-brainer. It is a no-doubter. It is undeniable. There is no debate. There is no banter. The number one, the best quarterback in the history of South Carolina football, Mr. Connor Shaw. And I am a huge Connor Shaw guy. Guys, you asked me my favorite Gamecock football player of all time, Connor Shaw. I am a Connor Shaw guy. When I think of winning, when I think of a Gamecock, when I think of what I want a Gamecock to be, I think of Connor Shaw. Now, listen, is Connor Shaw the most talented quarterback to ever step foot on the field at Williams-Brice Stadium? No, he is not. Guys, I would argue Steven Garcia was much more talented than Connor Shaw. And I don't think many folks would fight me on that. And I understand that Connor Shaw was surrounded by some of the greatest players in school history. I get that, right? But Connor Shaw made everyone around him better. He was someone that understood the quarterback position, what he needed to do. He knew where everyone was on the field. He was a guy that could beat you with both his arm and his legs. I think he was a very underrated passer, especially late in his career. I mean, guys, you look at his final season. You look at his final season, guys. He threw 24 touchdowns to one, a single interception in that 2013 season. I mean, just a phenomenal year. Right. So again, these stats back it up. The numbers, they all back it up. The wins. My goodness, the wins. A guy that never lost to Clemson. I mean, who can forget all of the memorable victories with Connor Shaw under center? You think back, all three of those Clemson games, right? Won the last three against Clemson in that five-game winning streak. The 2013 Mizzou game, which cemented Connor Shaw's legacy as a legend. The greatest warrior in the history of Carolina football. A guy who would play through countless injury, would play through sickness, would literally run through a brick wall. Nothing could stop this guy. Nothing could stop this guy. Right? And I'm sorry. Listen, I'm here for the banter. I'm here for debate. But if you don't think Connor Shaw's the greatest quarterback in the history of the University of South Carolina, I'm sorry, you're just wrong. you're just wrong. There's no other way to put it. He simply put the greatest. He is the GOAT. He is the greatest winner, the greatest warrior, the greatest competitor, and the greatest quarterback. So again, guys, that is my list. We'll go through them one more time. Number 5, Phil Petty. Number 4, Steve Tannehill. Number 3, Tommy Suggs. Number 2, Steven Garcia. And number 1, Connor Shaw. Guys, I would love to hear your feedback, your list. What's your top 5 best quarterbacks in Carolina football history? Do you agree with my list? Do you disagree? I got to say, guys, this is our first list of players. I feel good about this list. I feel really, really good about this list. I'm confident this list will be well received. I know there will be some banter, but I don't think this will be the most highly debated list we put out there, especially one, guys. I mean, even if you think there's guys that were more talented and they had better stats, and sure, those guys are out there. But the records that Shaw put up, the amount of games he won, guys, 17-0 at home, that will never be touched. I mean, I hope it is. I hope somebody comes out. I hope a Tanner Bailey or a Braden Davis or whoever, right? Whoever. I hope someone can do that, because it means Carolina football has risen to heights that we've never seen before. But 17-0 at home, absolutely unreal. I mean, it's just – you look back at his career. So, again, guys, we'd love to hear your thoughts, your list, your top 5. What do you think? Top 5 best quarterbacks in Carolina football history. And, guys, we'll continue along with our top 5 series on the show next week. Guys, we do have a couple of notes moving off of football and into baseball. As you all saw probably yesterday on social media, Colin Burgess, the Gamecock starting catcher for the past couple of seasons, he has hit the transfer portal. You know, guys, I won't go into much detail. It's South Carolina baseball is not in a great place right now. You all know my feelings on Mark Kingston. You know, I think there needs to be a change made. You know, I'll just say this. There is a reason you are seeing mass exoduses year after year after year. And, you know, I had somebody reach out to me on social media. Oh, I hate this type of journalism where you're saying things that are vague or what have you or whatever. You're you're saying things that are vague or what have you. And, you know, for obvious reasons, right? I cannot attach names to things. I cannot say exactly who said what. But let me just say it's interesting times right now with Connor baseball and the environment that's been created for players to have success or be successful or unfortunately lack thereof. There's a reason you're seeing so many guys hit the portal and South kind of having to scramble in the transfer portal to get guys to come here. On that note, moving off the Colin Burgess news, Jonathan French, former Clemson catcher. Of course, he entered the portal. He was on campus just a few days ago. So maybe that's another reason why Colin Burgess hit the portal. French visiting, again, the former Clemson catcher. Is he someone that joins his former teammate Dylan Brewer and someone that contributes to the Gamecocks lineup in 2023? We'll have to wait and see. But I think certainly, again, Mark Kingston's going to hit the transfer portal. He's going to hit JUCO, try to build out the roster that way. And, you know, we'll just see if it works out for him. So really interesting, though, when you think about the state of Carolina Clemson, that rivalry, when you got Clemson guys coming to Carolina so openly and so freely, it's just, you know, listen, I welcome them with open arms. Sure, come on, whatever can help our ball club. But it's strange. It's just strange. There's no other way to put it. Guys, hey, that's going to do it for me. Appreciate you all tuning in. Thank you all so much, like I said, for the continued love and support. Hope you've had a fantastic week. I hope you have a very happy and safe weekend. And the show is not over yet, by the way, guys. Hey, we had a fantastic conversation, a great interview with former Gamecocks catcher and the current head coach of North Greenville. Some really, really juicy stuff in this, guys, in regards to his thoughts on the South kind of head coaching job, also the Gamecock to NGU connection. Of course, we taught his team's current run in the Division II College World Series. So a lot of exciting stuff. Stay tuned for that. Again, guys, thank you all so much for the continued love and support. Thank you for always rocking with us. Stay tuned for all the content bleeding out the eyeballs. And we appreciate you. Have a great weekend, guys. In the meantime, enjoy this conversation with former Gamecocks catcher and current NGU head coach, Landon Powell. Coach Powell, you there?
I am. I'm here. Can you hear me?
All right. Yes, sir. We can hear you. Sorry. We had you blasting here in Tin Roof in the Vista. What's going on, man? Appreciate you taking the time.
Yeah, no worries. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. We got one of your former players, Connor, here. Connor, take it away, my man.
What's up, Coach? You there?
What's up, CG?
What's up, man? How you doing? Hey, so go ahead and tell us a little bit about, you know, what you guys are going through right now, the process, and, you know, how it's been so far.
You broke up a little bit, CG. Say that again.
Yeah, so he was just asking about what you guys are going through right now. Obviously, you're in the World Series, what I think creeping up on winning a national title, man. What's that process been like? Obviously, that experience, the first time in school history.
Yeah, man, this has been a fun run for our guys. I mean, we've started practice back in August, and this was a goal of ours. You know, our program has been successful the last several years. Guys like Connor and all his teammates, they laid the foundation for this program that we have here now. And you know, these guys know that they had the talent and had the roster that was capable of making a run and doing something special. So we've worked hard. We've put in the time. And then, you know, for it all to culminate at this point and for us to be here on the main stage with an opportunity to accomplish our dreams, this has been pretty cool. So we're loving it. We're trying to have fun and enjoy it and soak up every moment. It's been a really fun couple weeks for our guys. And just really proud of my team and grateful for the players and all the time and effort they put into it, but also grateful for guys like Connor and his teammates. I mean, this isn't something that happened overnight. You know, North Greenville University was a cellar dweller in Division II baseball, you know, 7-8 years ago. And this program was a complete overhaul. And Connor can kind of attest to that, like where it was and where it is. It's pretty incredible what's happened. And it's no accident. It took a lot of hard work and effort from players and coaches. And that's what makes this all more special.
Now, Coach, for those of us who haven't watched North Greenville baseball this season, at least to the level to understand your ball club, give us an idea. What's the dynamic? Are you pitching heavy, hitting heavy, a nice balance of both? What's been the key to you guys' success this season, would you say?
Yeah, we're a pretty dynamic group. So we can – and this is kind of by design. I mean, I've been around the game a long time and played it at the highest level, and I've learned kind of the things that make teams really hard to beat. And, you know, for me, when I played, I really – obviously the home run is a big piece of the game. So you want to have guys that can lead the yard and change the game with one swing. But also, for me as a catcher, speed was always something that really put a lot of pressure on our team. And whenever I was catching and having to worry about holding runners and, you know, throwing out base runners and you know, defending the bunt and teams that would go first to third on singles and always seemed to have guys in the scoring position, those were the hardest teams to compete against. They just never let up. It never felt like an easy inning or an easy out. So I wanted to develop that in our program. And, you know, like the guy you're sitting with there, Connor Granum, he was a 5-tool player. He could run. I mean, he was a 6'4 runner. I think he stole 20-plus bases every year at North Greenville. He also hit 10 home runs a year. I mean, he was a very dynamic player. So I got a bunch of Connors right now. I got, you know, I think we have 6 guys in our starting lineup that have 10-plus home runs. And I think we have 5 or 6 guys that have close to 20 stolen bases or something like that. So, you know, we can really run. We can lead the yard once in a while. And that's helped us offensively. So pitching-wise, you know, we've developed some guys that have great cutters off speed. They can pitch backwards if need be. We're not a team that's going to run a bunch of 95, 96 mile per hour arms out there and just try to blow you away. I mean, we do have a couple of velo guys, but our bread and butter have been guys that can keep you off balance, change your timing, locate on both sides of the plate. And the cutter is kind of that equalizer. My former assistant coach, John Kootlangas, who played at South Carolina with me and also played in the major leagues, he's no longer on my staff. He had to move back to Florida, but he was a wizard at teaching the cutter, and he passed that down to some of my other assistant coaches who now are still with me. And that's a secret ingredient, I believe, for our pitching staff. Most of our guys throw cutters, and it's a pitch that college hitters just are not good at adjusting to and aren't good at hitting. So that's really helped our pitching staff. And we've been able to do it on both sides of the ball this year.
Now, Coach, obviously you have college World Series experience, with the Gamecocks going to Omaha back in the early 2000s. How do you feel like that experience has helped you in regards to letting your team know just how to prepare and how to approach, you know, chasing after a national championship?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, my experience is being able to play in the College World Series 3 years in a row there, back in my time in South Carolina, but also my time playing in professional baseball and in the big leagues. All those things just kind of, you know, it got me comfortable on a big stage. And that's important for me as a coach, that I can pay that forward and kind of pass down that same energy to my players to let them know that, man, the big stage is the place you should be the most comfortable. This is where you should let it loose and have fun. And, you know, there's no stress. There's no nervousness. I mean, this is the time to let it loose and go. And I think my players have learned that and kind of responded to that. And, you know, that's why they seem to be playing their best baseball when it matters most. And, you know, I think some of that is just part of the everyday environment and culture that you create in your program. And we're a very competitive bunch. And I've said this a lot the last couple of days and other interviews and things, but we try to compete at everything we do. And Connor can tell you that. If Connor comes over to my house to hang out, which he's done plenty of times, and we play a game of ping pong or a game of horse, Connor knows I'm going to beat him. He knows I'm a competitor.
Okay.
And then I'm going to do everything I can to beat him. And he'll tell you the truth right now. I will whoop him in horse.
Okay.
Right? So, you know, and I want players on my team that are the same way. They have that look in their eye. They're not willing to lose. Like, losing is not an option. And – you know, I try to identify those guys in recruiting and fill my locker room full of guys that want to compete no matter what it is. And, you know, our first night in Cary, our players went out and bought a bunch of Nerf guns at Target. And they had a Nerf war all around the hotel in the parking lot. And you would have thought that they were competing for the World Series playing Nerf war. You know, with guns. So that's how competitive our guys are. It's part of our everyday fabric and like how we are. It's our culture, and I think that also prepares us for the big stage. These are the things we get excited for. You know, we would much rather be playing a top ranked team that's a great opponent than play a team that we know we're going to beat by 10. I mean, those games aren't fun. The teams that when you know you're going to roll them, you know, like when I played at South Carolina, when we played Wofford or Furman or Charleston Southern midweek, those games weren't even fun. You know, we knew we were going to kill them. And we got more excited for Florida and you know, Mississippi State, and those are the games we wanted to play. So I think our guys here have that same mentality.
Now, Coach, you've got some goons on that coaching staff, man. Matt Williams, Trey Dyson, friends of our show here. I'll ask you, what's it been like working with them? I know they're great people. Trey, it's hilarious following him on social media and the way he operates y'all's account. And he's done a great job, by the way, of helping to spread awareness to the brand that is North Greenville Baseball. But what's it been like? How cool has it been, I guess? You know, you mentioned working with former teammates and stuff like that. How cool has it been having that Gamecock connection at North Greenville, pulling some of those guys who did so well at the University of South Carolina, and now they're positively impacting your program?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I treat my coaching staff like, you know, that's my inner circle. That's my family. Those are the people I need to trust the most in my life. And, you know, when it comes to my job in baseball. So Trey's the guy that's been a friend of mine since we were, you know, 18 years old. And we've been through a lot of things in life together, in sports, and I've known him a long time. So I know I trust him. I know he's got my back and I got his. And that's a very important piece of having someone like that on your coaching staff. And he's tremendous with the players. He reminds me so much of Coach Toman, who coached us in college. You know, Trey's a little bit of a goofball. He is hilarious. He keeps a very light atmosphere. He's really good at what he calls easing the tension, you know, like Chubbs and Happy Gilmore says, ease the tension, baby. That's Trey Dyson. Like, that's how he is. He keeps things loose. He's also done a great job with our hitters, and he's done a great job with our first baseman. And like you mentioned, our social media has been on point since he's been here. So Matt Williams, another Gamecock. Matt and I didn't know Matt really well prior to hiring him. I really just hired him because he was a Gamecock and because he was trying to get into coaching, and I had an opportunity for a grad assistant, so he came and got his master's. Matt and I have come really close the last couple of years. He actually coaches my son's travel baseball team, and my son loves him to death, and Matt's developed great relationships with those younger boys that he coaches, and he's been a big asset for our team at North Greenville. He works with hitters as well as infielders. He does a lot of charting in the dugout, stands next to me every pitch, and we talk the entire game. He gives me times from pitchers to the plate, and you know I decide my running game based off of things that he's telling me. Matt and I have become very close, and I love working with him. It's great to have Gamecocks on the staff. And I'm a Gamecock at heart. I believe darn it, and I want to have those kind of guys in my corner because I know that they feel the same way I do about success and winning, and they came from a similar type of culture that I did playing in college. And that's what I'm trying to build here at North Greenville. So
now, Coach, before we get you out of here, because I know obviously you're tight on time, got a lot of interviews this time of year, which is a good thing. But let's address the elephant in the room. I'm gonna put you in the spot. Let's just play the hypothetical game, whether it be next year, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what have you. If the job were to open up in Columbia at the University of South Carolina, your overall thoughts, again, it's all hypothetical, but would you consider coming back to Columbia and taking over as the head coach?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any secret about that. I've made that clear before. I've mentioned to Coach Kingston I'd be interested if he had a spot on his staff. I've mentioned to Coach Tanner that I would always love to come home. I tell recruits when they come on recruiting visits to talk to me, and they ask me, are you going to leave to take another job? Here recently, the last couple weeks, I've been getting a lot of recruits asking me about the Clemson job because I guess my name's being thrown in that a little bit. So I've made it very clear that I'm not going anywhere except if it's the University of South Carolina. I love Greenville. I enjoy coaching at North Greenville. My wife's born and raised here. Our families, like my in-laws and nieces and nephews, all live in Greenville. I have no reason to leave the city of Greenville. The only place I would leave for would be to go back home to South Carolina and have an opportunity to coach there in Columbia. So there's no secrets about that. And I say that I want to make that clear. I don't mean like taking Coach Kingston's job. I fully support him. He's the coach of our team right now. I still pull for that program. I pull for Coach Kingston. I want that Gamecock team to get back to the greatness it's been. And I'd love to have a piece in that somehow, some way. But I don't have control over those things. I can only worry about where my feet are. And right now I'm in Tigerville, South Carolina, trying to do the best thing I can for these guys. The players I've been coaching here, you know, they've poured their blood, sweat, and tears into this program, and they've given me everything they can. And that's my goal, to give them everything I can until this season's done, or until my time in North Greenville's done. And that, you know, who knows, man? I might be at North Greenville the next 20 years of my life, and I'm perfectly okay with that if that's what happens. And like I said, the only place I really would leave would be for Columbia. But I love the coach. I love making impacts on players' lives. I think a guy like Connor can kind of attest to that. Like, it's more than just wins and losses. Like, I love building relationships with these players. I love paying forward the things that were done for me in my career and trying to pay that forward to the next generation. It does not have to be on the big stage like Columbia or in the SEC or in those kind of things. I feel like I can make an impact, you know, anywhere I'm coaching. And in the last several years, that's been at North Greenville University. And I think this is a perfect niche and a perfect place for me to make an impact. I feel like it's been needed. And I plan on doing that the best of my ability as long as I'm allowed.
Coach, this has been incredible, man. Truly, we appreciate you taking the time. Again, I know you got more interviews coming up and stuff. I want to say first things first, I speak for all Gamecocks, and I say it was a pleasure to watch you wear the garnet and black and also to watch your professional career as well and obviously all the success you've had at NGU leading that program. It's been awesome, man. We wish you all the best. When do you guys – let everybody know, when do you guys play? I apologize. I haven't looked at the schedule. What's the upcoming schedule for you guys, and how many wins away are you from the national title?
Well, we play so we had today off, and we're in the winner's bracket. We're 2-0. So Westchester just knocked off Angelo State about an hour and a half ago. Okay. So now Angelo State is out of the tournament. We now play Westchester tomorrow. They would have to beat us twice to advance. We have to beat them once to advance to the national championship. So we'll play Westchester tomorrow, which is Thursday at 6 p.m. And if we win that, we move on to the national championship game, which is a best of three series.
Okay.
If we were to lose tomorrow to Westchester, we would turn around and play them again on Friday, and the winner of that would go to the national championship. So that's kind of the schedule here coming up. And I appreciate your kind words about my playing career at South Carolina and those things. I want you to know, and all those listeners listening, it was some of the best years of my life. I loved playing in South Carolina. I loved the fan base. I, to this day, believe Gamecock fans are the best in the country. And I've said that ever since I left that place to go on and play professionally or whatever. I've always said, you guys have no clue how the fans in South Carolina care about their sports and care about baseball. They're truly the best fans in the country. And I will always cherish my time there. It was a great 4-year experience. I met my wife there. I made lifelong friends. I made lifelong memories. And it definitely shaped and molded me as a person. So I'm grateful for it.
Coach, man, we appreciate it. And again, wishing you guys best of luck the rest of the way out. Bring home that hardware, man. Again, thanks for taking the time, Coach.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on. And CG, you take care, buddy. Love you.
You too, Coach.
Appreciate you, Coach.